Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast that's brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com, a website for all you hockey nuts that want to get a little bit better and want to learn a little bit more about the game. If you haven't been to the site yet, come check it out and subscribe. We cannot believe how many people have already subscribed to the site. It's been unbelievable, and the support and the feedback that we've gotten, we couldn't be happier with what we feel like we're providing to the hockey world. So thank you so much to everybody who subscribed. Thank you to everybody who's subscribed to the podcast. We really appreciate it, and we got a really, really special episode today. One of the most enlightening and inspiring talks that I think I've ever had with anybody in the game, and today we sat down with Kendall Coyne, who grew up outside Chicago. She went to Northeastern University and is one of the top women players in the world right now. She's a five-time world champion gold medalist. She's a Patty Kazmir Award winner, which is the same thing as the Hobie Baker or the Heisman for women's hockey, and just recently won the Olympic gold medal with Team USA Women. And we're so excited to get her on the pod. And before we get to her interview, let's bring on my partner, Jeff LaVecchio. Jeff, what's going on today?
Not much, buddy. It's raining protein shakes and egg whites over here.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Well, dude, what did you think about this conversation with Kendall? She is, like, probably one of the coolest people I've ever talked to in my entire life.
I mean, I was extremely inspired by her. You know, I was having some technical difficulties over here on my end with the microphone, so I just got to sat back and listen to this. It was, I mean, I would pay to listen to her speak. Like, she was so inspiring, and listening to her journey and how she was true to herself throughout the whole process. You know, I don't want to give anything away from our talk with her, but just kind of some of the things that she had to go through as far as, you know, her life choices and how she wants to live her life was really, really exciting to hear, because I feel like there are a lot of parallels between how I lived my life in college and how she lived hers. So very cool person, very inspiring, obviously extremely successful, but at the same time, she was so humble. Like, I mean, she's just somebody that, you know, if she wasn't married, you want to bring her home and show her off to the family, ever meet your family, because she's just a great person. Like, her and her husband are just going to breed, like, superhuman, super perfect, super amazing, intelligent, nice, psycho athletes. Like, that's going to put some money on their, whatever it is, a male or female child. I'm going to put some money on it being, you know, some kind of successful athlete in whatever sport they choose, because she's just an awesome person.
Yeah, and a little bit of background. Kendall got married to Michael Schofield, who is an offensive lineman for the San Diego Chargers right now. So, yeah, two unbelievable athletes right there.
Google their names, because as soon as we got off, I Google imaged, you know, their names, and it is hilarious. I don't even think she comes up to his, like, waist. Like, he is a massive human being, yep, and she just looks tiny next to him. But what's hilarious is, when we were talking, they still have, you know, all the competitions in their house, and I'm sure they're fighting over the remote left and right, and she probably uses her speed and he uses his massive strength. Just fun people.
Yeah. No, she was great. And I don't think women's hockey gets enough credit, man. Like, those women are so dedicated and so talented and so passionate about the game. And, you know, I hope at some point in the future that, you know, the women's game gets a little bit more notoriety, because, again, these women are just unbelievable people and great role models. And myself having a daughter, I mean, I'm going to have her listening to Kendall's conversation. I'm going to save this in the future, because she's just an incredible person. And to get her perspective on hockey, to get her perspective on USA Hockey and some of the things that happened there was really, really cool. So without further ado, we'll stop talking and we'll send it over to Kendall. We are very honored and very proud to have with us here Kendall Coyne. So, Kendall, how you doing today? Thanks for being here with us.
Very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and you are a busy, busy person right now, so we really appreciate you fitting this in. And
well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the respect you have for women's hockey. It means a lot.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, wanted to talk to you. I'm from Chicago, from the north side of Chicago, but I know you grew up in Palos Heights on the south side there. Two brothers and one sister. What was it like growing up on the south side? And tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up.
Well, I think I have to start off by saying we grew up a Sox fan.
Oh, you did? You just made my day.
Of course.
You just made my day. I am a diehard White Sox fan. When you went out there for the ceremonial first pitch last year and you shot the ball from the mound, honestly, it was one of the most proudest moments I've ever had in my life. So good for you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I didn't know you were a Sox fan. I figured you were a Northside Cubs fan. So this is off to a good start today.
Yes, 100%. That was going to be one of the things I was going to ask you at the end. But now that we got that out of the way, the vibe for this is going to be totally awesome for the rest of the way. So this is great.
Well, back to your original question. Growing up, I mean, my older brother, Kevin's 3 years older than me, and my parents just put him in all different sports as a kid, and they brought him to the formerly known as the Orland Park Ice Arena to play hockey, and they brought me to watch him, and I wanted to do what he did. And 23 years ago, girls were figure skating, and solely figure skating, and they got me figure skates. And after a week in those, and it's no disrespect to figure skating, it's absolutely my favorite sport to watch in the Winter Olympic Games. I wanted to be like my brother, and I wanted to play hockey. And so after a week in figure skates, they got me hockey skates, and haven't looked back since. But I grew up playing multiple sports as a kid. I was doing basketball, baseball, softball, and then played softball through my sophomore year of high school at Carl Sandburg in Orland Park. It was always, we were just always playing sports, always in the driveway. I was tied to a basketball pole half my life because my older brother was just beating me up. it was definitely awesome, awesome childhood, just filled with a lot of love, support, sports, just so much fun and support from my parents, for all of us and everything we ever wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, that's amazing. And did I read it right? Do you have a brother that's currently in the military right now?
I do. It definitely puts an added weight on my shoulders, putting on a USA jersey. But it was his dream. He's in the cyber division in Fort Gordon, Georgia. We're all super proud and honored, and it puts a tear into my eye every time I put a jersey on, just because I'm thinking about him and his fatigues and how, you know, I get to just play hockey for our country, and yet he's fighting, and you know, it definitely has changed the way I view representing my country.
Wow. Sure. Does the military let him wear your jersey on game days when you're playing?
I don't know. My brother was actually fortunate enough to be at the Olympics. He was able to come because he finished his program at Illinois State, and then they flew home from South Korea, and he landed in Chicago and then got a U-Haul and drove straight to Georgia the next day, so he was on the ground on time. He was cutting it close, but he had my jersey on when at the Olympic Games. So I know I've actually heard from some of his some people in the Army just saying like how awesome of a cadet he was when he was in training and stuff like that. So it makes me very proud.
Yeah, that's amazing. And perspective is a pretty powerful thing. And I think probably both of you have unbelievable perspective. Him looking at what you're doing and you looking at what he's doing probably makes you both better. And you're playing with a lot more passion and a lot more purpose, having the relationship you have and knowing what both of you guys are doing. So would you guys say that you both have a really big influence on each other based on what each other are doing?
Oh, absolutely. And if you remember, the first games in 2014 were in Russia, and I think that was really something that inspired my brother to want to be in cyber. It's a relatively new branch in the Army, and with all everything politically going on, and when we went to Russia for the games, I think he was more intrigued about how can I help our country, with the technology side of things. And he has an influence on everybody. And I think, I'm just so proud to have a brother in the Army, and just everything he does for our country. It is very special. And I think all of our military personnel, I mean, what they do on a daily basis is unbelievable. And, our country is not free without them. So it is very special.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's 100%. Mad respect for the military, and we wouldn't have what we have if it wasn't for them. So if you get a chance to talk to your brother and you remember this, tell him we said thank you.
I will. Thank you.
All right. So moving on here, you know, you grew up in Chicago playing for the Chicago Mission, which is one of the top programs in the country. And then you decided to head off to prep school. What made you make that decision? And what was your prep school experience like?
Yeah, so I did 4 years of public school at Carl Sandburg in Orland Park. And then I decided to do 1 year of a postgraduate year at the Berkshire School because I was looking at Ivy League schools during the college recruiting process. And the Ivy League schools wanted to see me be challenged more from an academic standpoint in more of a private setting. So that was my that was my decision to go to prep school. But it was an awesome experience, prepared me as well as Sandberg did to go into college, and I really learned how to study. I learned what it was like to be a student first, athlete second. When I was there at Berkshire, and I have some lifelong friends from the school, and it was a great experience.
Is that a normal path for a lot of women's hockey players going to play D1? Because like Tope said, I trained Nicole Hensley, who you play with on the women's national team, and I wasn't familiar with women's path to play D1. So is that a traditional path going out east to play at a prep school, or do most girls go right from playing AAA in high school, or what's the usual?
No, I would say it's traditional. You just graduate your senior year of college or high school and go right into college. Like I said, I went to a prep school for academic purposes, so after my senior year at Sandberg, I could have went to college. That's what we all do. We don't have juniors like the boys do, so we're all traditional freshmen when we go into college. And you can go, I mean, you can be recruited. You won't believe it, but I'm actually in 82 degree weather here in California, and I mean, girls can come out of here at seniors in high school and go to college. You can stay at your high school wherever you are and make it as far as you want.
Oh, that's
pretty
really
exciting.
Nice. That is really that's nice. Really, especially that 82 degrees that you're talking
juniors.
About, too.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Well, that's great. And so you went from Berkshire to Northeastern, not your typical schools that you're talking about when you talk about women's hockey. What made you decide to go to Northeastern, and how was your experience there? You obviously had a lot of success while you were there, so talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I remember when I committed to Northeastern, everyone was a little shocked. I heard, you know, different comments and like, why aren't you going to Wisconsin? Why aren't you going to Minnesota? You know, and those schools are amazing schools. They just weren't the schools for me. While they had the hockey talent, you know, maybe that people assumed I would be a part of, but it wasn't the best fit for me. Socially, academically, and it just wasn't what I was looking for. And so when I went to Northeastern, I fell in love. I was able to get my master's and my bachelor's degree in five years. I was able to do a co-op program, which I did with the Chicago Blackhawks media relations team, which was awesome, between my sophomore and my junior year. I was able to be in the city of Boston, which was a big part for me. And being from Chicago, I just, you know, something that a lot of people know about me that might, and some people don't know about me, is that I've never taken a sip of alcohol in my life, and I'm proud of it, and I don't intend to. So that was something that was really big in my college recruiting process, was, you know, where do I socially fit? And being at Northeastern and in Boston, I knew that there was so much to do. Red Sox games, Celtics games, there was, you know, musicals. There was so much going on outside of just the daily college life that I really felt like I fit in, and that was something that really attracted me to the school.
Wow, that's crazy. And how was that for you when you were in college? Because obviously people in college probably tend to go the other way and probably drink a little bit too much. So as a very serious athlete, as someone who really cared about her craft, was that something that ever frustrated you? And maybe it wasn't just with your teammates, but just regular people that you were in the dorms with. Talk to me a little bit about going through that process.
Yeah, it was definitely challenging at times because people, you know, have their opinions, and we're kind of like, well, why can't you just be like a normal college student? And I said I could, but it was just my decision. I never saw a reason to. I never felt like I wanted to, and I had the best college experience I could have had with the way I did it. And, you know, I wouldn't change anything. And I had a ton of fun. And I actually remembered all of it.
That's super interesting, because I was somebody who didn't drink a lot, as well when I played. I wasn't abstinent, but, how did your teammates react? Obviously, without like naming any names, like, was the team completely open and accepting of that? Were there a few people who were like, "Oh, you're a goody goody," or, you know, against you for doing that? And just kind of how did they accept you from your initial time on campus?
You know, initially it was tough, because when you're a freshman playing over juniors and seniors, there's always going to be people who are frustrated. But at the end of the day, I learned that, you know, who I am and my work ethic is going to silence that noise. And just believing in who I am and being who I am every day is more important than trying to be someone who I'm not. Because if you try and live your life by being someone who you're not, it's going to be exhausting. And that's kind of how I approach my everyday. And, you know, some teammates were accepting, but then by my junior and senior year, it was, oh, this is who she is. And, you know, this is what she does. And, it was, you know, I was as much a part of the team as anyone else. And it was an awesome experience.
That's unreal. And I do have to say, my daughter is a year and a half years old, and I am keeping this conversation and telling it to her, showing it to her in about 10 years. So I think that's amazing. And just kind of transitioning and going along with what you're talking about, and reading a little bit more about you before coming on the podcast, I found out one of your quotes that you kind of live by was a Gandhi quote, and that was, "Be the change that you wish to see in this world." And everything that we've just talked about is obviously reflects a lot about that. Also with that, you guys had a lot going on before you went over to the Olympics in 2018. You know, you guys stood up to USA Hockey for what you believed in, and you didn't feel like as women you were being treated fairly and as fairly as the men's team. And again, for me, with a wife who's very independent, with a daughter now, it's something that I can look to and be like, man, this is something that we can teach our daughter when she gets to be a little bit older. Talk to us a little bit about that process and what kind of role you played in standing up to USA Hockey for what you guys believed in.
Yeah, it was a very long process, and to be quite honest, it's still going.
Okay.
But in 2017, when the news broke, at that point we had been negotiating with USA Hockey for almost a year. A lot of people only saw the 2 weeks leading up to the World Championships because we did boycott them, or we threatened to boycott them. But it was a year-long process, and USA Hockey didn't take us very seriously. They thought we'd kind of go away and that would be it. But we knew the only leverage we had was the World Championships. So we came together as a team of 23 and said, look, we need to put our foot down and not go to the World Championships until significant progress is made. And the three main things we were fighting for, it wasn't just an equal pay case, it was an equitable support case, and there were three main focuses, and one of that was programming, so meaning like more games, more visibility and marketing, so when we go places, you know, market us, and when also for programming, it's not just us, it's for the grassroots level and down, and then a compensation piece, because to that point we weren't receiving anything from USA Hockey for training or anything. We were just told you should be happy to represent your country. To that point, you know, those were the three focuses, and I think there's a lot into it, but I think the most important piece from the takeaway or from the lawsuit was that it wasn't just a fight with 23 players who are named to a world championship roster. This fight was for all girls and women across the United States. When we boycotted, they tried to get replacement players to play in the World Championships. And the fact that they couldn't find a player just to even put on a USA jersey and go to the World Championships speaks volumes as to the support and the knowledge that everyone had in regards to this fight. we knew we needed everyone. And, you know, we heard from a lot of people. And after it was about 2 weeks, a long 2 weeks, and one big turn was seven of us got on a flight to Philadelphia. We negotiated with USA Hockey for 12 hours in a room. That was on a Monday, and the World Championship started on Friday. And we all flew back on Tuesday. And on Tuesday we woke up, they were finding out, or we found out that they were reaching out to more replacement players.
Oh man.
And we were all so confused because we just sat in that room for 12 hours, and you know, they continued to find replacement players. And then by Thursday, we were able to come to a deal, and we were on a flight, and our first game was 7 o'clock on Friday against Canada.
Wow.
Oh my God. Wow. How hard was it to play in that game? Or were you just like so excited that you guys got at least some of what you wanted, that energy carried you through the game?
Oh, it was the easiest game to play, in my opinion. I mean, we got there and we saw little girls with, you know, our hashtags throughout the whole negotiation process was "Be Bold for Change." And like you said, Topher goes along with the Gandhi quote, but you've seen little girls with "Be Bold for Change." After the game here, we heard from just people coming up to us saying thank you. And it was just, it was unbelievable, the amount of support and just the amount of support. It was, and we knew we needed to play well. We didn't have a choice. You know, we just stood up for what was right. And but going off that, even today, we have to continue to fight. We can't be satisfied. And you know, things aren't 100%. But you know, we learn from this process. And you know, the next step is now educating the younger players on, all right, this is what's right, this is what's wrong, and like, you need to fight for what's right, and you need to be treated for what you're worth.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how cool of a feeling was it for you guys, having stood up to USA Hockey, and then when they reached out to replacement players, they were kind of like, nah, we're good. We believe in the mission of what these women are doing. Was that something that validated what you were doing? Did that make you guys feel like, wow, like we're really making a difference in the world?
Yeah, it was, you know, just for those, and you know, it was those players' decisions to make that call. And I think it was important because it showed that this fight wasn't just a fight for the 23 players going to the World Championships. You know, even for the players going, it was the year before the Olympics. It's a huge World Championship. It's really the last time you have the opportunity to prove yourself on a world stage before the games. So from a tryout standpoint, you know, it's a big deal. And we had some players making their World Championship debuts. We had some players playing in their sixth and seventh. So everyone was at a different stage and, you know, different agenda, whereas the players that got a call to replace, you know, the team, you know, some of them were like, wow, this could be an amazing opportunity, the only opportunity I ever get to represent the U.S.
Yeah.
And however, they said no because they recognized, you know, my decision to say no is not only going to affect those players, but it's going to affect me. It's going to affect the future of our game, and that's what matters.
That's unreal.
That is so exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, going along with that, Kendall, you guys obviously won the gold medal. Do you feel like that process that you guys went through, all the ups and downs of everything that you fought for, do you think that that was a factor, a positive factor, in you guys coming together and playing so well at the Olympic Games?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, we became so close as a team. When you go through something like that off the ice, it just bonds you even more on the ice. And we were strong, and not only just strong on the ice, but strong off the ice. And it reflected in our play. And, you know, a lot of us lost in 2014, and we weren't going to let that happen again. And I think, you know, what we went through those 2 weeks in 2017 was more, it's hard to put into words, but it was an extremely hard 2 weeks. And it only made us stronger come 2018, and especially in February.
That's crazy. That's awesome. And, tell us a little bit about just winning gold. I mean, that game against Canada was probably one of the most exciting games I've ever seen in my entire life. Describe how you felt during the game, after the game, carrying the jersey around. There's some unbelievable pictures that I'm sure you'll take with you for the rest of your life. Talk to us a little bit about just winning the gold against your rival Canada.
Yeah, it was awesome. Just the way the day started, it was a a 1 o'clock game in Korea. So we woke up, we had breakfast, and then we were getting on the bus to go to the rink. There was just so much energy, so much excitement. Some people have waited their whole life. Some people have waited 4 years for redemption. Some people have waited 8 years for redemption. Everyone was just so excited. But I think the difference between 2014 and 2018 in my eyes was in 2014, as a rookie walking into the gold medal game, I looked at a lot of our veteran players and they looked so nervous. And I was like, oh my goodness, like I'm nervous now. Everyone's so nervous.
Yeah.
And then, which a little nerves are good, but not to the extent of like everyone looked like they were going to pass out. But fast forward to 2018, we had players on our team. If you recall, we didn't lose a world championship in the last quad, so we won four straight. There were a lot of players on our team who have never lost an international competition, meaning lost the medal.
Wow.
So there was so much confidence in the room. Whether you've been to the Olympics or not, you could look around the room, person to the left of you, person to the right of you, whether you're Kayla Barnes, who was, I think she was 19 years old, or, you know, Gigi Marvin, who was 30 or 31 years old. Everyone had just confidence oozing out of them. And I think it was, that was the one thing that was different in between periods. I don't know if you remember, but the first period we were a little nervous, a little shaky, but we came in back in the locker room and people were just making jokes and, you know, it was like, all right, we got this, like take a deep breath. And, it was just, it's hard to explain, but it was, everyone just knew, like there was just so much confidence. And then obviously the third period, it wasn't until 7 minutes left when Monique scored and we all were like, okay, it's just a matter of time. Someone's got to put it in. Like, and she did. And obviously the shootout was just beyond incredible. Jocelyn's goal, Maddie's saves, even some of Canada's goals were very nice. And it was just amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine. So
if you had the decision to make, would you rather have it go into a shootout or play it out into overtime?
I think I would, you know, I'd prefer probably to keep going, keep playing. But, you know, it's something, we don't make the rules, we just abide by them. But either, you know, I guess either way, I don't know.
It's funny, like when I was playing, I absolutely loved shootouts. I thought they were great. But then when I got into coaching, I couldn't hate them more. Just you'd have no control over the situation and you just sit there in that like 5 seconds from when the player is going in on the goalie, your just stomach gets in knots and you're just, it's crazy. But I'm with you. I'd rather see you play it out. But you guys won, so that's all I care about. I'm glad it's shootout last year.
I mean, we were at the men's game the night before and they lost in a shootout, if you remember.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, dang, like, I was, this stinks, like, and then the next day we're playing and we're winning in a shootout and we're like, oh, okay, you know.
Perfect.
You know how it is when you have no control, you just do what you're told.
Yep, we all know that very, very well. But yeah, that was an unbelievable experience just watching it. Yeah, just hearing you kind of talk about it, it was, it puts it all into perspective again. And it was such a nominal moment in USA Hockey history. And I think it'll be one of those things that you guys will probably be having reunions in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, just going back because it was such a great moment. And you know, I kind of hear you talk about going into the locker room and everybody was confident. Sitting here as a coach, listening to you talk about that, you guys must have had just unbelievable player leadership in that locker room. Talk to us a little bit about just your player leadership and how they sculpted your team and got you to where you wanted to go.
Yeah, I think when you're on a national team, you know, especially at the highest level, and, you know, everyone brings a different style of leadership. I think every player leads in some way, shape, or form, and it's being able to feel confident and comfortable in the locker room, speaking up, or just being confident around your teammates. And I think everyone brought something unique to the table, whether it was something in their personality, their skill set, whatever it may be. But everyone had a just a quiet confidence within them. And I think that's what made us so successful. And everyone led by example in some way, shape, or form. Whether you saw it, like, for example, Jocelyn's, you know, amazing goal, or someone you might not have seen, you know, in the locker room telling jokes between periods that usually tells jokes. You know, it was there was just the group we had. Everyone was just was themselves and stuck to their strengths and didn't try to be someone they weren't. And that's what made us successful.
That's incredible. That's so cool. And that's such a great lesson, because that's so hard today for kids. I feel like everybody wants to try and to impress and be like anybody else. But just to hear you talk about everybody being themselves and how it was such a benefit to your team, I think that's incredible for anybody that's listening. Moving on to a couple more things here. You're playing pro hockey now. You're playing for the Minnesota Whitecaps in Minnesota. How did that come about, and how do you enjoy playing pro hockey? Has that been a fun experience for you?
Yeah, so this is my second year with the Whitecaps. I played for them the year before the Olympic year. And, it's been a great experience. The Whitecaps have been around since 2002, actually. This is the first year they joined the NWHL, so that they are in a league. But I think what I enjoy most about playing for the Whitecaps is that they've been around longer than anyone. And the reason they started was because Jack Brote, who is the owner of the team, realized that women don't have a place to play after college. And they don't have an option. It's get a job. So he started this back in 2002. And it's obviously still around today. And because of his love and his passion for the game, he has made this team sustainable. But I think, you know, I've enjoyed it thus far. And there's so many amazing people on the team. But I think what's hard is, day in and day out when we play for the Whitecaps, we all want one league. And that's what the next big step in is for our game, is one league. And, you know, it's something similar to the WNBA, like a WNHL. So until that happens, we're kind of just, you know, wasting our time right now. And that's what's frustrating, is we want it to be done the right way.
Yeah, and how are those negotiations going with the Canadian League that they have going on right now? Do you think there's been steps in the right direction? What do you feel like are some of the things that are inhibiting what's going on? And do you foresee it coming to fruition at any point in the near future?
Yeah, I think the two leagues need to hand themselves over to the NHL for them to take over. I think until both leagues agree upon that, nothing's going to happen. And you have to give kudos to both leagues for what they started and what they created. Because it is awesome now to see the amount of women that have a place to play after college. But similar to our boycott, you need to take the next big step. It's scary. It's risky. There's a lot of anxiety that comes with it, but the next step needs to be taken, because this game is in a place where it is growing at a crazy rate, and people are drooling to see women's hockey. If we had the direction of the NHL, we'd have games on TV. Hopefully marketing deals, hopefully partnerships with NHL teams, and the game would only grow from there. And most importantly, young girls would have role models that they could see on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we will be waiting with bated breath to see if that can happen, because, again, having a daughter that's really young, would be great to see her aspire to life after hockey. If she is fortunate enough to be a hockey player and loves to play hockey, the girl doesn't stop saying hockey. I think that's one of the only words she says as an 18-month-old, but for sure. And the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, Kendall, a little bit off the hockey subject, but you had a big summer off the ice this summer, and it's been pretty well documented on the internet and stuff. You had a pretty high profile wedding, getting married to Michael Schofield, who is an offensive lineman now for the San Diego Chargers and won a Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos a couple years ago. What's married life like? How's that going?
Yeah, it was the best day of my life. I'm sure I'll change that once we have kids. I don't know, Topher, you can speak on that, but to date, it was definitely the best day of my life, and married life has been, it's been pretty much the same, except some confusion with my name, especially in the sports world. People are like, wait, what's your name? but it's been great. I've been in California for a little bit for the season, being able to watch him play, has been awesome. We're right in Orange County, so it's funny. It's like 82 degrees and sunny every day, so I'm a little confused. Hockey's been awesome. I've been able to skate with the Anaheim Junior Ducks U18 and U16 boys while I'm here. But I've been traveling a lot. I'm actually heading to London to watch him play next weekend, which I'm really excited about. But it's been awesome. But that goes without saying, as much as I love being able to be here and be with him and support him, I wish I was able to live somewhere where there was a sustainable pro league, where I was being paid enough to forcefully live somewhere and play hockey for a living. That's not the case right now, so that's why it's a blessing in disguise that I'm able to be in California, doing work part-time and kind of, traveling a lot, but, it has been enjoyable to be here and support him, and, they're pretty hot right now, so it's been fun to watch the Chargers.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, my wife, I don't even think she knew what a blue line was when we met. She played sports growing up, but certainly, she's more interested in design and things like that. But what's it like having a husband that's at the same level as you are in terms of your dedication and how much time and effort you put into athletics? Do you guys push each other? Do you guys talk about sports a lot? How is that like?
Oh yeah, we support each other. We always say we're each other's biggest fans. I always say he's my biggest fan, literally and figuratively. He's 6'7", 3'10", so he's pretty big. But it's awesome because we just understand what each other's going through. We get the day-to-day life. There's long days in sports, and some people think it's all glory, but there's definitely a dark side to pro sports, and we definitely understand that side. And at the end of the day, no matter what, how good or bad a day it was on the field or on the ice, we're each other's biggest fan in life. No matter what, it's just, it's just so fun to be able to support each other in sport, but in life as well. So, it's been definitely fun. And, my favorite day of the week now is Sunday. I have to admit that.
Are you guys competitive with each other, like over everything?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've gotten to the point where I have to be smarter because I've gotten competitive with him in food. I can't challenge an offensive lineman to an eating competition.
Yeah. That's really
what's awesome. What's like the biggest battle you guys will have, like competition? Like, do you guys play bags or do you play video games or what's some of the competitions you guys have around the house?
I would say it's more in the summer when we're training, because we train together in the summer. And it's more like we'll always do like the pound for pound comparison. So like if we're benching, we take his percentage and my percentage, like see who's, he's like, you don't know what it's like to be 300 pounds. And I'm like, you don't know what it's like to be 120. And he's like, yeah, I was in sixth grade once. And I'm like, all right, cool. but we usually, whether we run a lot, like, conditioning wise. So that's always a competition. We compete with everything. It's healthy, but it's not. It's all fun and games. We play bananagrams a lot in season.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'll tell you what, Kendall, if I was going to Vegas and I had to put my money on you versus him, I'd probably pick you 10 times out of 10. So I have affinity for smaller players that have a lot of drive in them. So I don't know why, but that's great. And we really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with us. It was awesome getting to meet you a couple years ago when you helped us out and played at our charity game. in Chicago that benefited Special Olympics. And I have to tell you that we had some pretty big time names coming to play in that game. But of all the feedback that we got and all of the people that came in that were really excited about the event and everything like that, I have to say that even though Patrick Kane and guys like that were there, the two people that were talked about the most were you and Josh Pauls, who was an Olympic gold medalist for the Paralympic team, for the sled hockey team. And what you guys are doing in terms of standing up for what you believe in, there's a lot of people in your corner. And we can't wait to see you guys continue to fight, and we can't wait to see you guys get what you ultimately deserve, and that's just equality. So we really appreciate you taking the time to come on and being one of our first guests and giving us some credibility for our podcast. And we wish you the best of luck moving forward, and hope you have a fun season with Minnesota.
Thank you guys so much, and I appreciate you guys, you know, putting me on and respecting women's hockey as equally as you do men. And you know, it's an exciting season coming up. We have our Four Nations Cup. We'll actually be in Chicago on the 28th, training with a national team. So,
oh, nice. Where are you guys training at?
MB. We're there the 28th through the 3rd, November 3rd, and then we head to Saskatchewan for our Four Nations Cup the 3rd through the 11th. So that's our next big event. So hopefully people can follow, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of fans like I did this summer at the Men's Pro League. They come out and see us during our training camp in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, stay warm up in Saskatchewan. That is a cold, cold, cold place at that time of year. So hopefully you guys get a good hotel to stay at, and hopefully you guys can bring home another medal.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys so much for having me too.
All right. Thanks, Kendall. Have a good one.
Thanks, Kendall.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.